rough as guts. When I'm not fussing through the bush for a first to find, I'm listening to Geo Talk.
In this episode of Geo Talk, we speak to Court at Work about updates to the GCA website. We go through the 5 tips for safe geocaching, and we test your knowledge with the regular Geo Talk Trivia Challenge. All this and more on Geo Talk. Well, welcome to episode 25 of Geo Talk in what I thought was meant to be summertime. Now, I know people who are not in Australia are going to say, what is he going on about? He's been talking about drought for the last year and now he's complaining about the rain. Well, it's just not stopping raining. And if anyone is listening up in northern Queensland, I hope that it is slowing down for you. I know that the city of Mackay has been badly flooded and you guys are going to be copying a bit more over the next week. So look, batten down the hatches and good luck. And I hope that if you have been flooded, that you've managed to save most of your possessions and you'll get through. And of course, on the other corner, in the northwest corner, there's a cyclone which is threatening to hit Exmouth or Exmouth, depending on which part of the country you pronounce it from. And so the weather's pretty wild and woolly. And even in Sydney, we've had a lot of rain here. And of course, throughout Perth, Adelaide and Melbourne, they've had hot winds and then cold weather. So it is really topsy-turvy weather. And it's hard to know whether or not it's summer or autumn or winter or spring, any day of the year somewhere in between. Anyway, so that's weather at the moment. Hey, look, I came across an interesting concept, and it was while I was listening to Podcaster, and I chatted to Sunny and Sandy over there about a term that they've coined called the well-rounded cacher. And I love this concept. I know a lot of people are into the numbers game and like seeing hitting different milestones and so forth. And I admit I find that quite enjoyable, being able to hit, say, you know, 800 or 900 or 1,000 and finding a pretty memorable cache to do it on. But this concept of well-rounded cacher is where you try to complete at least one cache in each different difficulty and terrain rating. Now, of course, there are 9 different difficulty ratings. So you've got 1, 1.5, 2, 2.5, all the way up to 5. And then the same with the terrain. So you've got 9 by 9, that's 81. And I think it's a really good challenge. I've spoken to a number of people that I've been caching with and they're trying to do it as well. Unfortunately, sometimes it can be a little bit subjective and some people change their attributes or change the difficulty and terrain ratings on their caches. So you might find that you had one in the past and then it's gone missing. So maybe the real challenge is to try and get 2 just as a backup. And I did a tally of mine the other day and I think I'm up to about 57 out of 81. So that's not too bad. Maybe that's a target for me, my caching resolution, maybe before the end of the decade. It might take me a bit longer than the end of the year. Another thing that I found interesting over the last few weeks is the different types or styles of geocaching. Now, last weekend just gone, I did 2 caches. That's all I did. And that was on a Sunday. And both of them involved quite nice walks. Now, admittedly, they were in a suburban area. It was in a national park, one in North Epping, and you'll hear some audio later, and one in Lang Cove. And they were quite lengthy walks. I think one was about 5.5 kilometres and the other one was 3 kilometres. But it was just nice to get out there and be in nature and try that out. Now, the weekend before, I went with a good friend of mine, Phil Ruffers Guts, and Ruffers Guts 4x4 is his name, and we nabbed, I think it was 11 each, so in total we did about 14 caches, and it was a bit of running around and going through the suburbs and doing urban caches, but there was a bit of fun in that too. So it just shows that the geocaching can happen in different environments, and it can sort of give you, I suppose, a bit of a thrill in different areas of your geocaching mind. Another big story that's occurred over the last 2 weeks over the ditch across the Tasman Sea in New Zealand. I think most people around the world would have heard of this. There was a bomb scare in Auckland when a geocache was suspected to be a bomb located near a government building. Now, here's a little bit of audio from a radio report on Radio New Zealand, just to let you know what happened.
Players of a high-tech game of hide-and-seek have been left red-faced after their activities sparked a full-scale bomb scare in central Auckland. Called geocaching, the game involves people hiding boxes of trinkets, then releasing the GPS coordinates for other players to find. Well, it took the reassurance of a fellow Keisha to convince police there was nothing sinister happening yesterday. And that Keisha, as they call themselves, Ben Gracewood, joins us now. Morning, Ben.
Morning, Jeff. How's it going?
Good, thanks. So you looked out of the window and saw what was going on and immediately twigged what had happened?
Yeah, I started caching probably about 3 months ago, and the first thing I did was put in the coordinates of my workplace and noticed there was a cache very close by behind the AOT Centre. So when I saw the cordon that the police had put in, I tweaked and thought I'd better go and talk to them.
Right. So what happens? You log in and see there's something there, and then you go and find it? Is that how you play the game?
What it is, yeah, there's a website where people log their caches, and so if you're going to travel to somewhere interesting, you go and find caches near that location, put them in your GPS, and go hunting.
And when you've got it, you open the box, and then what?
Leave a note. You generally take something out, put something in, so they've got quite often little trinkets in there, and also things called geo coins, which are coins that you can take around the world and watch the progress of them on the website.
So when you told the police about this, what was their reaction?
Oh, they had no idea what it was. It took quite a bit of explaining for them to understand that, you know, what the person had been doing. They showed me the CCTV footage, and you could clearly see the guy had a GPS unit that he was wandering around, looking very suspicious, trying to find a package.
Yeah. What did the package look like?
It was a little round click-clack type container. It had a magnet on top so it could be secured underneath the railing. And it was painted black, so it did look quite dodgy.
Had it been there a while?
June last year, I think it was originally placed, and it says on the website. Yeah.
So I wonder how many people had gone to it in the meantime and not been seen as being suspicious.
Yes.
Before that bloke did.
Yeah, quite a few, I think.
So have you put a warning out on the website?
You can put a note on each of the pages of the cache. So I put a note on there saying probably not the best place to locate a cache, with some security guards and cameras looking at you.
At least let them know.
Yes.
Ben, thanks for joining us and explaining that. That's geocacher Ben Gracewood.
So that's a report from Radio New Zealand about the bomb scare over in Auckland. And I think what it highlights is two things. One is the role of the finder in making sure that they do act discreet. Now, I know we try our best, particularly when we're in the city, to not act too conspicuous, but I think it's near impossible. I've been on a couple of adventures, at least one where there was a group of five of us and another where there was one other person. And if you stand back and just stand maybe 100 metres or not, so, maybe even only 50 metres away and have a look at what geocaches are doing when they're looking for an urban, particularly a micro, you'll realise that it is near impossible to act discreet. So I think sometimes you've got to time your finds, particularly I found in the city. Usually at the end of a working day when people are leaving, they're not taking too much notice. But either way, be careful and don't attract attention. And I think the other important thing is the role of the hider, to make sure that they're not going to hide a cache in an area that is going to create panic. And in case of this one in Auckland, it was very close to a government building. And of course, these have security cameras around and so forth. So best to everyone who has a cache in that sort of situation, maybe to review it, have a look at it and decide whether it's worth having there at all. And so now that brings us to the GeoTalk trivia question for this particular episode. And of course, being a new year, it's always a good opportunity to look back at 2007. And it's a three-part question, and it's going to be the obvious, and I'm surprised I haven't asked this one already. Which cache had the most number of finds? Which cacher had the most number of hides? And which cacher had the most number of finds in 2007? The answer to those questions at the end of the podcast. Well, it's time to have a look at the Geocaching Australia website, and I'm speaking to one of the developers, Peter, also known as Caught at Work. How are you going, Peter?
I'm very well, thank you, Darren.
Now, you've been involved in the website for a while, a bit over a year, am I correct?
Give or take, yeah, 12, 18 months.
Yeah, and over that time, I mean, we've seen that the Geocaching Australia website grow, and there's been a new release recently. Can you take us through a few of those different ones, starting first of all with Swaggies? And for our overseas listeners, we might have to describe first of all what a Swaggy is.
Sure thing. A Swaggy is a uniquely Geocaching Australia version of a travel bug. They cost nothing to put out there. You can list them on the website in the Swaggy section. So it's very similar to a travel bug, but you don't have to purchase dog tags. You can just write up your own description and release them into caches as you see fit.
Now, there's been a few teething problems over the last year that these were implemented, weren't there?
There have been. Swaggies are a little bit different because we don't have a single point for them, and we still actually have one outstanding issue to address, which is to actually be or to be able to grab the swaggy off another keisha. You can grab them in and out of keishas without a problem, but actually grabbing it off another person is a little bit of a problem, which we're looking at addressing very shortly.
Okay. But what are the enhancements that you've put in just in the last month or so?
Yep, for the latest release, you can now mark your own swaggies as missing. So you can replace them at your convenience, or you can mark them as archived if you've decided that you no longer want that swaggy to be travelling around. So it cleans out those that are no longer active. What we've also allowed for is to be able to plot swaggies that are currently in caches on Google Maps. So if you jump into a particular swaggy, a geocaching Australia, if the swaggy is in a cache, then in the navigation section on the right-hand side of the page, you'll be able to pop out and actually see the location of where that swaggy is on a Google map. You can also do that for all of the swaggies that are currently out there in the wild. Again, if you just go to the swaggies page from the navigation section at the top of the page, you can click on a link, and that will show you where all of the swaggies are currently deployed around Australia.
Okay. Now, can the swaggies go in and out of the more traditional geocaching or groundspeak geocaches, or can they only travel amongst the GCA ones?
No, swaggies can be checked in and out of any cache, regardless of whether it's listed on Geocaching Australia or listed on geocaching.com. It's easier if they're travelling around Australia because we have most, if not all, of the available geocaches that are actually located in Australia and New Zealand. But there is some functionality available if somebody wants to drop a swaggy in a cache that's overseas that's not currently in the Geocaching Australia database. It's they simply have to supply one or two more pieces of information when they perform that drop. But no, you can drop a swaggy into any geocache around the world.
Okay. And could people use geocoins that they've made or purchased from elsewhere and turn them into swaggies rather than activating them on the geocaching.com website?
You can. You can turn anything you like into a swaggy. You're given the next available SW number, so your swaggy is tagged. It's SW0001 is the first one, number two is the second one. You're able to provide your own password. So in the case of a standard groundspeak travel bug, all of the travel bug tags have numbers stamped on them. Therefore, they're used for verifying that you've actually had the tag in hand. With a swaggy, you can create your own unique password, so you can use the number that was stamped on your coin, or you can use any other combination of letters and numbers that you see fit, provided, of course, you attach that password to your swaggy when you release it.
Okay. All right, let's have a look at one of the other enhancements. You've made some changes to the logs, particularly being able to look at recent logs of caches that you own. Can you take me through that enhancement?
Sure. Again, via the logs tab at the top of the navigation section, you can now drop down to view all of the logs on the caches that you own. One of the things that we've had a number of requests for is to be able to quickly review for the last couple of weeks' worth of logs on your own caches, so you can see if you happen to have missed a maintenance note or you may not have got a particular email sent one day. You were able to catch up with all of those logs on your own caches. Makes for very interesting reading. Without having to hunt through and check every single page of every single cache that you own, these are all quite nicely summarised for you.
Yeah, now that's quite a good enhancement, that one. Another one you mentioned was with statistics. I mean, a lot of almost the foundation of Geocaching Australia's website was built on both the forums and the statistics. Take us through some of the new stats that that are at our disposal.
Sure. I think the one of most interest to people, or certainly for those who are interested in statistics, historically people have always had, robust discussion about the total number of caches that a person may have found in a day. Recently, there were some Kiwis that came across to the state of the crow eaters. It picked up 195, I think it was, cases in a particular day. And other people have said it's not all about the numbers. It's also about the journey. It's also about the puzzle that you may have completed. It's about the terrain. Somebody may have gone on a 50-kilometre walk and only picked up five cases, but they felt that the quality of the effort that they put into those was bigger than somebody who had found a whole lot of numbers. So what we have on your own stats page, and you can get to your statistics from your own cache page, so under your My tab in the navigation, you can actually drop down to what we've tentatively called the highest daily score. And what that is that's the total sum of all of the caches that you found on a particular day of their terrain multiplied by their difficulty. Now, that sounds rather convoluted, but if I give you a little example, my highest ever number of finds on a particular day was 20. That was about 6 or 12 months ago up in Queensland, where I went through with my brother-in-law, and we found 20 1-1 or 1-1.5-type caches. But my highest daily score is a score of 71, where on that particular day I only found 8 caches, but they were all 3-3s or 3-3.5. And I suppose if I actually look back on that, I would feel that the day that I found my highest score of 71 was probably a better day for me than rushing through and finding 20 caches. So it gives another opportunity for caches who enjoy doing very tough difficulties or tough terrains to come up with a marker that says, yes, I think this was one of my better days.
I'm just looking at my score. My highest one is 71. How does that rank? I mean, what is considered sort of average and what is considered, I suppose, maybe obsessive, for lack of a better word?
That's an interesting question. Of the Kiwis that came across a couple of months ago, I think they've actually got scores in the, I think it's the high 300s.
Right.
But again, they would have been looking at a lot of ones, 1.5s, and possibly twos. But if you actually go back and check the date next to that number that you came up with in your stats, you could review that day's caches and you go, actually, I had a very challenging and tough day that day.
Mm.
So you've probably found, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 caches on that day of which the terrain and difficulty are probably 3, 3.5.
All right, well, that's going to be an interesting stat and very much useful for people to go back and probably give a different group of people bigger bragging rights compared to those that pick up a lot of micros and urban ones. So we'll keep our eyes on that one. Another one you mentioned was the driving directions edition, and I think this is probably one of the best ones that I've seen so far. Take us through the driving directions option.
Sure. Well, with thanks to Craig Ratt, who's one of my fellow developers at Geocaching Australia, if you jump on to a particular cache page, in the navigation section on the right-hand side of the page under the maps, you'll be able to click on a link that provides you driving directions. So if you have your home coordinates stored at Geocaching Australia, then clicking on the driving directions will plot out on a Google map basically turn-by-turn instructions to get from your home coordinates to the closest place on the road where the geocache can be found. So it's very handy if you're heading out to the country. You may not have mapping on your GPS. You may not have mapping available to you on a laptop. So you can take those turn-by-turn directions and they'll get you very much out to the spot that you want to be looking in.
All right, well, we'll be trying that feature out over the next few weeks, particularly for those people who don't have an in-car GPS that looks like a good enhancement. And finally, you mentioned geo-birthdays. Tell us a little bit about the geo-birthdays functionality.
Sure. This came up as part of discussion in the forums. Somebody was trying to foster a greater sense of community within the organisation, and the discussion topic sort of turned from celebrating people's real birthdays to celebrating what we termed their geo birthday. So if, again, on the Geocaching Australia website, if you go to the Caches tab, you can drop down to Geo Birthdays. And what this does is this lists by their age, so first birthday, second birthday, third birthday, etc., those caches who made their first log on this day at some point in the past. So it may have been a found log, it may have been a did not find log, it may have been a note that this is their first interaction electronically that they appear to have made to geocaching. So we celebrate and provide best wishes to them on their particular birthday.
All right. Well, that's quite a list of enhancements have gone through. And obviously, you guys have also done a lot of work in the background there on streamlining workflows and so forth.
Yes, there's been a number of workflow improvements, especially in logging in, logging out. We fix bugs as they come out. We're also seeking very much to improve the performance of the website. There's some current discussions going on in the forums about the server at the moment. But we spend quite a lot of time addressing items and things in the background that you guys don't get to see the cool functionality of, but they do hope, we hope, make your experience at the site somewhat better.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, thanks very much for taking us through all those additions, Peter, and hopefully we might catch up with you again later in the year to look at some of the newer and improved features that continue to happen on the GCA website. Caught at Work. Thanks very much for your time.
It's been a complete pleasure. Thank you, Darren.
Hello, all you geocachers. I'm Firefly03.
And I'm Daryl W4 of the Cachemaniacs. Our podcast brings you interviews with your fellow cachers from all over the globe. New episodes are released each week, but there's more than a year of great interviews to check out for days of podcast listening goodness.
Listen or watch them at home on your computer, burn them to CD to listen on the way to work, or take them with you on your portable media player as you go caching. You'll get to know a little about others in the caching community, and maybe even pick up a few tips.
Point your browser to cachemaniacs.com, or look for the Cachemaniacs podcast in your favorite directory.
All of us go geocaching for fun, and hopefully at the end of a geocaching day, we all get back safe and secure and happy logging our finds, knowing that it was a day well spent. But I think it's important that each of us, when we go geocaching, whether it's hiking in the bush, going through suburban parks, or even just getting in the car to do a couple of drive-bys, that we take into consideration some of the safety aspects of geocaching. So here's a quick list of five different points that I thought might be worth remembering. And if you've got any points that you want to add, don't forget you can record them and email them in, or even type them and email them in, or phone them in on the GeoTalk hotline and see if we can build up a bit of a safety list for geocaching, particularly for those of us here in Australia. So tip number one is go with a friend or let somebody know where you're going. I think it's important that, particularly if you're going solo, leave a map with someone or leave some notes showing the areas in which you're going to go geocaching, where you expect to be at certain times of the day, and also, most importantly, when you expect to be back. Now, if you're not going alone and you're going with a friend, it's probably a good idea to do that anyway. But it's always good, particularly if you're going on fairly long walks or out into remote wilderness, to take a friend along with you as well, along with a map and a compass and a set of notes to go along with you. Tip number two is take supplies. Now, even when I go urban geocaching in suburban parks, I always take a backpack with me. And in that, I store a couple of things, because you never know, you might run out of money or petrol, or when you go driving, or you might find that you're going to take a lot longer while you're out in the bush. So here's a few things that I take in my backpack. Always make sure that I've got plenty of water on any particular day. At least 1.5 to 2 litres you should take with you. On hotter days, take more. Make sure you take some food, even if it's just a small bag of, say, some dried fruit and nuts, or trail mix, as you might call it, or whether it might be just a muesli bar or some fruit, just something to munch on, particularly if you've been geocaching for a while and you've forgotten to go somewhere to grab some lunch, even if you're in the suburbs. It can just tie you over and keep your brain ticking. Another thing I always take with me is my first aid kit. Now, I've got a small one that I take with me. It's got a few Band-Aids. It's got tweezers and bandages and Betadine and so forth. So if you get any cuts or scratches or so forth, you can fix yourself up. Also take gloves. Now, I cannot underline the importance of this. Now, I know that I've been breaking this rule in the last week or two because I threw my old pair out and I need to get a new pair. But if you go to a hardware store, for example, you can get some of those cloth gloves and they're really handy, particularly if you're going to stick your hand into crevices or holes in logs, just in case something tries to bite you, you've got a little bit of protection for you. And they're also handy for you if you're climbing up rocks or over rocks or over logs and so forth. It helps you to get a bit of a grip. And another two important things to take with you are sunscreen and insect repellent. So particularly if it's going to be a bright day with a bit of sun out, you don't want to get burnt. And also if you're out amongst the mosquitoes and hey, particularly at this time of the year when there's a bit wet and there's a bit of rain around, you're going to find mosquitoes and other insects and bugs are going to be out annoying you. Tip number three is research the area. Really look into where you're going to go geocaching. Now, it's a little bit easier if you're getting into the car or you're just going through a few urban parks. It's not too difficult to get around and through those places. But if you're going bushwalking, make sure you have a paper map. There's a lot of areas around Australia where tracks sometimes disappear or they go in directions you don't expect, and your GPS is not likely to have those maps built into it anyway. So best to take a paper map and also do a bit of research online. You've got tools such as Google Maps to make sure that you can get a bit of an idea of the lay of the land. And if you've got Google Earth, you can sometimes see the three-dimensional shape of it as well, so you'll be able to see where there are gullies or peaks and ridges and so forth. Fourth one is don't overextend yourself. Now, this is really important, particularly if you're going on long trips, but sometimes even in some of the urban parks, there'll be areas where you might need to do a bit of climbing or you might need to go in a tunnel or so forth. Don't do things that you wouldn't normally do just to get the cache. Make sure that you know how far you can walk in the bush over a set amount of time. For example, I know that on flat terrain, I'll do between about 4 to 6 kilometres on a good day in an hour. If you're going up a hill, then obviously that's going to be a half to maybe even a third of that distance in that time frame. So make sure you're familiar with the area and that you don't overextend yourself. And that way you won't get into trouble, because no cache is worth finding that you're not going to be able to get out of the situation or go geocaching for a very long time because you've injured yourself. And finally, and this is probably the most important one, and this is one that we forget quite often, get back on time. If you've set a deadline for when you've told friends you're going to be back, make sure that even if you don't get back, you let them know that you're safe. The last thing you want to do is have your friends or family call the emergency services such as the police or the ambulance to go looking for you when it's because you just wanted to find that one extra cache. And particularly as the days are getting shorter at the moment, as we head into autumn, make sure that you leave yourself plenty of time to get back to your car or your transport so that you're not left in the dark and probably spending the night out in the middle of nowhere. Even if you're going urban geocaching, let someone know what time you're going to be back and get back at that time so that they don't think you've ended up in an accident or something terrible has happened to you. So that's my list of 5 geocaching tips for while you're out there. If you've got any others you want to add, drop an email to geotalk@mac.com or phone it in on 02 800 50 436. As we do in each episode of GeoTalk, it's time to look at some of the events that are occurring around the country. And on the 26th of February is a pub lunch in the Aussie Summer, number 13, that's being hosted by the Barramundis in Adelaide. So check that one out. On the 1st of March, there are 2 events, one in the Illawarra South Coast region down near Wollongong. That's the second annual Illawarra South Coast get-together hosted by the Rats. And also on the 1st of March is the Geocaching Tasmania Incorporated annual general meeting event, and that's being hosted by Cheesy Pigs down there in Tasmania. And on the 2nd of March is the ACT Cache of the Year 2007, hosted by the Essers down in Canberra in the Australian Capital Territory. And the final event that's being listed for March is on the 29th. That'll be the North Islanders in North Tassie, hosted by Snoova. You'll find links to all of those events on the GeoTalk website, which is www.geotalkpodcast.com. And if any organisers out there want to give a bit of a plug, an audio plug to their event, don't forget to give us a call or drop us an email at geotalk@mac.com.
Hey guys, it's Ben Doc Bob Darren here. Just calling first of all to show you how easy it is to get some audio onto GeoTalk. We're really after your audio, and not just me talking away all the time. The number to call for the GeoTalk hotline is 02-800-50-GEO, or that's 800-50-436. And the normal call charges apply. You're not going to get charged any extra. Or of course, you can always record it on any other device and email it in to geotalk@mac.com. Well, one of the things that you can do when you're calling in is thank another geocacher for hiding a great cache, and that's what I'm going to do this morning. It's Sunday morning. I've just finished a 5.5K walk. In the old speak, it's about 3 miles. And I have to say it was a fantastic cache. It was the culmination of a couple of others. And thanks to For the Ferals and Hydroflare for Signet 4 over here in North Epping. Certainly a fantastic cache, and if you're in the Sydney area, of course you have to do Signet 1, 2 and 3 to get the codes to crack number 4, but I can tell you it's well worth it. It's a great location. So if you've got a thank you, a milestone, or a first to find a call in, don't forget to call the GeoTalk hotline. And we'll be catching you on the next episode, hopefully. Catch you soon.
Well, that's just about it for this episode of GeoTalk. Before we go, a big hi to Marcus Vitruvius, also known as Warren, who I think is somewhere up in the northern Victorian area or somewhere around the border area of Albury, Wodonga, who wants to say thanks and hi for the podcast, and also letting me know that he's currently organising a trip to tackle the highest geocache in Victoria, one of the highest, at 1,986 metres above sea level, which puts it probably up in the top 10 of the highest geocaches in the country. That's up on Mount Bogong. And he also noticed that I logged my 300th find in Albury, so hopefully there might be a chance I might get down there in the future. Look, you never know. I'm always on the Hume Highway travelling between Sydney and Melbourne, so next time I'm coming down, I'll drop you an email and we'll catch up. And also, before I go, the answers to the trivia question. And those questions were, which geocache was the most found in 2007? That honour goes to Treebeard, located in the Botanical Gardens over in Sydney. Not surprising that it's in Sydney and fairly close to the city, so an easy one for most international visitors. And also a cache nearby called Tolkien Tree, which had 105 finds. The next one down in Australia was Foreign Currency, down in Canberra with 100 finds. And over in New Zealand, 102 finds for Dragoon Hayes over there in Mount Victoria in the North Island near Wellington. The top finder for 2007, no surprise, Dax Emu Mob with 2,045 and IF with 1,842 and then ADV with 1,769. And the top hiders for 2007 were Scrub Bull with 101 and Koori Scouts with 97. Now, if I'm not mistaken, those two caches are in an area very close to each other in Queensland, so it looks like there are a heck of a lot of geocaches being hidden, and hopefully they haven't all been washed away in the floods. So they're the top numbers for 2007. If you've got any ideas for any future GeoTalk trivia challenge questions, don't forget to email them in to geotalk@mac.com. Well, that's another episode in the can for GeoTalk. Now, hopefully the next one will be in 2 weeks' time again. It may be a little bit later because I have a little event happening in just under 2 weeks' time. So you'll probably hear about that in the forums and around the traps, and hopefully I might have a new geocaching buddy around that time as well. So, look, thanks very much for listening to GeoTalk, and until next time, safe geocaching.